Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Yeah, it's time now to look back on this weekend's Heineken Champions Cup semi-finals. A mixed weekend for the Irish provinces. Yesterday, Leinster booked their place in the final in Newcastle on May the 11th. Tries for James Lowe, Luke McGrath and Scott Fardy helped them to a 30-12 win against Toulouse at the Aviva Stadium. Standing between them and a record fifth title will be Saracens. The 2016 and 17 champions made it three semi-final defeats in as many years for Munster with a 32-16 win at the Ricoh Arena. There was just three between the sides at half-time, but second-half tries for Michael Rhodes and Billy Vunipola saw them comfortable 16-point winners. Joining me on Monday Night Rugby now to look back on the weekend's action is Eddie O'Sullivan. Eddie, how are you this evening?
Good news, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, Eddie. We're going to start straight in with Leinster, I think. 30-12 winners against Toulouse yesterday. Probably the best we've seen of Leinster for quite a while, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a very comprehensive performance. I think that everybody knows this Leinster team are top of the tree. I think you're looking at the two best teams in Europe going to the final now with Saracens, who can match them up, I think, in almost every facet of their game. But apart from that, Leinster gave a great performance. The concern going in was that this Leinster team hadn't played together very much, and they had been hit and miss in the Ulster game. They got away with it, and then they kept changing the team around in the Pro 14, so we were never sure. But credit where credit is due, it was a seamless transition. It was probably one of the most complete performances of the season in every facet of the game. And I think Toulouse played very well. There wasn't a Toulouse played badly, and Toulouse didn't pack their tent and go home like a lot of French teams do. They're actually quite a resilient French team. So Leinster had to work for it, but they got the job done and they did it very efficiently. So it's a very good boost for Leinster. It kind of reaffirms that they're as good as we think they are. And they haven't kind of shown that for a while because of one thing or another between the Six Nations and injuries and stuff. But I think they're right back there now, which is great news for them.
Yeah, you mentioned it there at the start. There were probably a few question marks with so many players coming back into the team, like Johnny Sexton, Robbie Henshaw and Devon Toner only had one game under their belt since the start of February. Sean O'Brien hadn't really played that well, even though he has been back for quite a while. But they all seemed to blend in very well together. I think probably the best point was probably that Johnny Sexton looked very, very controlled and looked comfortable out there, despite the fact that his last outing was that horror show in Cardiff.
Well, he was under a bit of pressure, and I think he knew that the talk during the week as he was feeling the heat a little bit, because the last time he played at Leinster was against Munster down in Limerick, and he didn't play well. And then he had a, by his own standards, a poor enough Six Nations, particularly the last game of the Championship, he didn't really deliver well. So all the talk was around where he was. So to be fair to him, the only way to shut everybody up was to give him a man of the match performance, which he did. So credit where credit is due, you know. Like, and I don't think people are writing him off. You wouldn't write off a player of Sexton's caliber; he's just too good a player. Like, but I think people were worried about his form. But it's the old story, you know. Form is temporary; class is permanent. So when the chips are down, you know, he delivers a man of the match performance. So you have to, and that I think that stretches across the whole Leinster team. You know, they have been, they were lucky against Ulster. Let's be honest; they really didn't play to par. And I think Leo Cullen, who's usually very honest in his assessment, said that they were very undercooked. And you would have thought then that in the build-up to this game, they would have kind of buckled down and got more of their team on the field. So whether it's between the IRVU player management system or the fact that they have such a big squad, they kept changing the squad. So my concern last week was not that this Leinster team wasn't good enough, but if they'd play well enough on the day. And I must say, hats off, they were top drawer on everything they did. This Toulouse team is top of the top 14. They're not a beaten Docker by any means, and they came to play, and they have a pedigree in Europe. But I just think the better team won. But they had to work for it, as we expected, and I think that made it a great day out and a great game. But you know, I have to say that the better team won. They look more composed under pressure. They were very good in what they wanted to do with the ball. They were very good at where they wanted to play with the ball, and when they got some chances, they took them. And that's just, if you're given a performance like that, marks out of 10, you'd be hard to give them less than 9 out of 10, and you could probably give them 10 out of 10.
In terms of defence, like we've seen Toulouse, they've been absolutely incredible going forward all season. To hold them trialless as well, just limit them to 4 penalties throughout the 80 minutes, that is something that's probably going to be a big boost for Leinster as well, just knowing how comfortable at times they looked dealing with the Toulouse attack.
Well, in fairness, it's a benchmark that Leinster like to set down. I mean, we talk a lot about how many points they score, but they do take a lot of pride in their defence. They do play a lot of defenders in the line. And they are vulnerable in the backfield at times. But, look, they had their homework done on Toulouse, and they were able to shut them down. But it takes a lot of hard work to do it. You know, that's a big Toulouse team. But let's be honest, Leinster are not a small team either. Like, the old days of Irish teams getting bullied around the field, particularly Leinster, like, who are, you know, at the moment, they're ranked first in Europe because they're the champions. So, like, they're not going to get bullied by even top of the top 14. That day is long gone. And I thought they stood up to that very well. I think, you know, you kind of set a standard of not giving away a try. And we're very lucky they got the call on the Maxime Bedard chip over the top. Like, that, it was great defence by Ringrose, and they got the nod on that one. But to be fair, they never looked like in danger of leaking tries. You know, there's always a chance someone misses a tackle or, you know, somebody breaks the system, but they tend not to do that. And when you get a performance like that as well, they'll need that sort of discipline in the final now, because we're looking at a Saracens team who are well able to play like Leinster. They're probably two teams that are most similar in their approach. Both teams defend very well. Both teams play very attritionally, and you've got to be very patient and very physical. So Leinster will be put the pin in their collar, but going on yesterday, there's no reason why they can't repeat it in the final.
If there was one time when Leinster probably were under a bit of pressure, it was kind of, I think, around the 30-minute mark, and Robbie Henshaw was yellow carded for the deliberate knockdown. There was a bit of debate, I saw yesterday. A lot of people thought it probably should have been a penalty try. Some people thought penalty and a yellow card was probably enough. What was your take on that? And do you think maybe if there had been a try or a penalty try at that stage, it might have changed the complexion of the game a little bit?
Yeah, I think at that stage, you know that Toulouse needs something to change the dynamic of the game. And maybe that could have changed it for them, you know, something like that. I've got to tell you, this whole yellow card, not a yellow card, just a penalty, you know, yellow card, penalty try is a mess, because there's really no consistency around it. Mm-hmm. We saw last week in the sports ground, Bundyecki slapped down a Cardiff attack and he got it was just a scrum. It's unbelievable. And then you had Richie Gray, I think, was on the ground, played the ball on the weekend, and he got a yellow card straight away. And then you have Robbie Henshaw. So it's you know, I've seen those given as penalty tries, and then I've also seen them given as scrums. So I think it's a huge area. It's a lack of consistency around that. It's a tough area, but it could have gone that way. And maybe that's what Toulouse needed, some kind of moment to change the momentum. But you'd have to say that, like, they needed something special or something unusual to happen to help them. They weren't, as long as Leinster kept doing what they were doing, Toulouse weren't going to win the game. And I think, like, classically, I think that the game was dead 10 minutes into the second half, you know. And in fairness, it's classic Leinster. Lord Sexton put a beautiful grubber into the corner. And I think it was Colby going back, carried the ball into touch. You know, he probably didn't have to carry it, but he panicked. And the next time, you know, there was a whole about 3 minutes of solid pressure there and two penalties plus an advantage before Faraday touched down. And that's classic Leinster. They get in there, they don't leave without drawing blood. And that was the game. I couldn't see anybody back for Toulouse after that. That was a half an hour to go. Just a matter now of Leinster just managing the last 30 minutes, and they do that very well. So I think that, you know, Toulouse weren't good enough. Leinster are definitely the better of the two teams. Leinster and Saracens have the bragging rights now. They are the two best teams in Europe, I think, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's great that they've got to the final, because, like, it should be an incredible event unless something goes pear-shaped. It's like two teams going at it who play very similar rugby and match each other well across the board. Like, it's really a dream for the sponsors of the tournament. You know, it's going to be, everyone's going to be watching that game on that day. That's one of those where were you on that day moments, you know.
Yeah, do you think maybe in general Irish fans might be feeling a little bit better about things, maybe not as nervy with the way they saw some of the big name international players playing over the weekend? We mentioned Sexton earlier on, Robbie Henshaw coming back, and Toner as well. Sean O'Brien also probably had the best game he's had for, I'd say, the guts of a year.
Well, yeah, and the bigger debate around this is that we all know that the Irish players are world class. There's no question. They've proved it over and over. We've got to where we are as a nation in terms of, you know, second in the world, rightfully so, beating the All Blacks, winning the Grand Slam. And that's, it's a very high standard. The big bugbear, I think, is how you manage that in terms of the player management. And it's a very granular management of our player system. Guys get measured to the minute they train and play, the almost number of carries they have. It's this new GPS system can tell you what you have for breakfast and if you put the cat out before you had it. So, like, I think we're managing the players. And at times it seems, looking from the outside in, that maybe the players are micromanaged too much. And we've seen players form slip because maybe they're not playing enough rugby. It's a very fine balance. Mm-hmm. There's always a risk when a guy is on the field to get hurt. Like we've seen it, Josh Van der Flair, you know, Dan Levy, they've got hurt. They're gone for the moment. Dan Levy has a horrible injury. That's the risk of being on the field. But if you err on the safe side of that, guys get undercooked. And if you have enough of guys in your team who are slightly undercooked, then the team is undercooked. So it's a very difficult thing. And training doesn't fix it. You really have to play. So that's the big conundrum. And it's not a criticism. It's just a conundrum that, I suppose, Joe Schmidt, the provinces, the RFU have to figure out. That they're giving guys just enough rugby to keep them really sharp and minding them so that they're keeping gas in the tank for the big games. So it's an ongoing process. But I think that sometimes when people see the form slipping, they get panicky, you know. And I think at times it's maybe that just guys haven't played quite enough rugby at that moment. It's very hard. And in fairness, Sexton would defy that with the way he played on the weekend. But not every player can do that. And if you want, it only takes a handful of guys or less on your team, especially big players, to be a little bit off on the day and the whole team suffers and the performance is below par. And that's what we saw against Ulster. But look, you can't complain. Whatever Leo Cullen did in the meantime, he got it right. And they were right on point yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, credit where credit was due.
Yeah, one of the other man of the match contenders yesterday is probably James Lowe. I'm going to speak about him now in a minute. But first of all, we can actually hear from him yesterday speaking after the win against Toulouse.
Very, very good day at the office, I guess, to keep such an awesome Toulouse side to trialist. I mean, that's what it comes down to in finals footy, and we managed to do that today.
I was watching the game upstairs in the press box with Andy Dunn, former player, and he was saying that, you know, when you play, you bring a wonderful unpredictability to a team. And he says that can be good when you're playing, but also quite scary because I never know what you're going to do.
Yeah, was there air conditioning in the box? Because, geez, it was hot outside. Yeah, you know, it's about I just try and stay in the system, and when I do get the ball, try as hard as I can. You know, when you're talking about unpredictability, that's Toulouse's game. You know, they're so quick and so fast, and I mean they've got a huge forward pack with a lot of skills who like to keep the ball alive, and then you look at their backs. Oh, they're ridiculous. I mean, Chesley made me look blooming stupid half of that game, but I mean we kept them trialless, and that was it. I had an awesome midfield pairing inside me looking after me, you know. So, and then our forward pack hustled so hard against their big boys. It was awesome to see.
Yeah, just a reminder, our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in. Eddie, James Lowe, he's great to listen to after the games, but he is just so much fun to watch in those 80 minutes. And the try he scored yesterday, the amount of work he had to do even after he picked up that offload from Sean O'Brien, he had to barge off one tackle and hold off another as he went over the line. He really is a difference maker when he's out on the pitch, isn't he?
Yeah, look, there's no doubt this guy is a world-class player. You know, he's proved it time and time again. He's a go-to guy. He loves the big occasion. His finishing is superb. He's a big unit, and he knows how to right tackles and keep himself in bounds. And I just think, as a footballer, he's exceptional. But the bigger picture here for him is it's not just his football ability. This guy's a kind of infectious energy about him. Mm. Like, I know Andy Dunn said he was unpredictable. I think it's more to do with the energy he brings to the team. He energizes guys around him. Because he just has this unflappability. He gets the ball, and every time he gets the ball, you just think something's going to happen here. It's like it's excitement. It's what like a soccer player does, a striker. Every time they touch the ball, you think something good's going to happen. And his work rate's good. He works hard to get the ball in his hands. And then when he gets it, it's rarely something negative happens when he has the ball. So he's the guy you want to get the ball to as much as possible. I think the team feeds off him quite a bit. They actually feed off that energy. And they know if they get it to him, he's going to go over the game line. He's going to step somebody. He's going to hand somebody off. He's going to make something happen. And all the guys around him react to that. And that's an energizer. And to be fair, he's not the only guy. I think Jordan Larmour has that potential as well. He's an energizer with the ball. But you have to say, Lowe, you know, does bring that, I suppose, excitement to the team when he's there. And funny, when he's not playing, you do sense there's a little bit missing. That's not disrespect to the other players. But some guys are like that. They have that ability to light up a game, and he has that energy. And yeah, he's very important to Leinster. But they've done well without him. But he's the kind of guy I know they're much happier having him on the field. But the overseas thing does tie their hands a wee bit.
Yeah, and we always see the conundrum anytime there's a big game coming up. Three, Jameson Gibson-Park, James Lowe and Scott Fardy. Only two of them can get picked. it just seems at the moment that, like, James Lowe, he missed out on Champions Cup selection, final selection last year. He's missed out in a couple of big games as well because it was just a needs-must situation with injuries in other positions. But you absolutely just have to find a way of squeezing him into that team. And whether it means that Scott Farrie or Jameson Gibson-Park might have to miss out, it just feels like it's a necessity, isn't it?
Well, it's a no-brainer, like, when he's fit. And the key guy for him is Luke McGrath. If Luke McGrath is fit, then they can put Farrie and they can put Lowe in, and because O'Sullivan can cover the bench.
If
they don't have a backup to McGrath, they've got to put Gibson Park in, and that's not going to affect them. And Farrie we underestimate Farrie in some ways. He's not a spectacular as James Lowe. It's very hard to be when you're in the back five or the front five. But Farrie has got this kind of, I suppose it's maturity around the team, this kind of calmness. Very smart player. Like, classic Australian second row in, like, even the John Eales type of mould, in that he's not too spectacular. He just goes through the game doing really good things all the time. He talks to guys around him. He brings fellas with him. He's a very good leader. And, you know, he certainly has brought a lot to that Leinster team in terms of, and there's a lot of experience in that team, but he does stand out as a guy who's the ever-present kind of, I suppose, calmness in the team. And you need a guy like that, no matter how experienced the team are. There's moments when you need, you know, guys to be there. And Lowe seems to bring that gravitas, Farrie seems to bring that gravitas with him. Lowe brings something else, that energy, but I think we underestimate what Farrie does. So he's another guy that always try and get on the field, you know, if they can. And he was losing out this week, ironically, because it was only that Rhys Ruddock got injured that he got in, you know. But I think, and not taking away from Rhys Ruddock, I'm a huge fan of Rhys's. I think in a funny way that injury probably helped when you saw the impact Farrie had, how he had Leinster on the day. You can never predict that, but I think he got in there and he got all his sleeves rolled up and made sure he made the point of making the fact that he should have been there in the beginning, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Just a reminder for folks at home, get your rugby text, tweets and Facebook comments into us and you could be named our Heineken Star Comment of the Week and secure some great prizes across the season. You could win yourself some match day tickets and Off the Ball branded goodies. We'll announce this week's winner on Friday, so get your comments in now. It just seemed like an absolutely brilliantly professional performance from Saracens against Munster on Saturday. In the first half, they got a few chances off the tee. They just picked off their points as they went. And they just knew eventually in the second half they were going to get a chance and were going to get a sniff of the try line. And when they got those chances, they took them. Does that just kind of show, when you look back at the quarterfinal Munster played against Edinburgh, how many points they just left behind when they didn't go for points? It just shows the difference between, I suppose, a decent team and one of the really top teams, the professional teams that know how to go about and approach a big game like that.
Well, it's just the clinical nature of Saracens. And similar to Leinster, they're just clinical. But I find it interesting to listen to Mark McCauley. He's always interesting to listen to after a game. And the two things that jumped out at me was that he said that they knew they'd have to be patient against Munster. And that was a very, very smart way to come at the game as a coach, to get across to the players that you're not going to beat Munster in the first 20 minutes. If it happens, it's a bonus, but it ain't going to happen. Go out and expect to play for 50, 60, 70, or 80 minutes, as long as it takes to wear down Munster. The only way Munster are going to beat Saracens, when you see the gap in the two teams, and there's no arguing about it, like, Saracens are a much better team than Munster, was that Saracens make mistakes and let Munster into the game. And so they went out with that philosophy that we're going to beat Munster no matter how long it takes. It might take 80 minutes, it might take 70, it might take 60. So patience, patience, patience. That was the first thing. The second thing is that, which surprised me actually, is that their kicking game, they beat Munster at the Contestables. Like, in the first, I think the first 20 minutes of the game, they won back five Contestables from Munster, which was kind of like, that was a shock to the system. Munster couldn't believe it, because that meant they were under the cosh relentlessly. They couldn't get the ball. And that was a surprise, but they worked it out well and they pulled it off. I remember that one time Andrew Conway plucking one out of the air to save a try. Like, that was that much pressure on Munster. But the other thing I think that they used to their advantage was the Billy Vunipola situation, because they talked about staying together tight. And look, it's a classic example, regardless of that whole incident, and just the general pantheon of getting a team prepared. If you can create that, you know, that siege mentality that everyone's against us and, you know, we're going to go out and we're going to prove everybody wrong. And there would have been a sense of that around the team, you know, that they they're going to rally around Vinopola. Whether they agreed with him or not, it's nothing to do with what Vinopola said. Mm-hmm. It's just to get rally around him and pull the team tight. And Mark McCall referenced that by saying, you know, the team were very tight. They thought of equal staying tight. It was a tough week in terms of stuff that's going outside the club. And, you know, so that to me was saying he got two things. He got two things right. He got them tight, which was the kind of using the negativity to be a positive for smart coaching. And the second thing, he had them in a very good headspace in terms of not trying to beat Munster in 20 or 30 minutes, just wearing Munster down relentlessly. And eventually we saw Munster put in a phenomenal shift in the first half. Like, it was unbelievable they held the goal line in the first half, Munster. You got to say, hats off. They were drowning at times and they found a way. But, like, eventually the dam burst. And once they got that try, like, at the start of the second half, a pretty relentless... You know, Michael Rhodes broke the line in the end and walked into the end goal. That was, you'd have to say, that was Munster, like the writing was on the wall there. But as long as that didn't happen, Munster had a chance because, you know, Munster kept chipping away. But I think that was Sarsen's philosophy. Look, at some point, Munster will crack here. And when they crack, we've got to take advantage. And that was it. That, like, after 40 minutes of relentless work, Munster cracked a few minutes into the second half. And that's psychologically massive. Mm-hmm. Because if Munster would have said, if we could stay in this game for the 10 minutes of the second half, then 20, then 30. Get into the last 15 minutes of the game, there's only one score. You can flip them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just didn't happen for them. And I think, to be fair, Munster did what they could, but just they weren't able to contain Saracens. And that's the difficulty playing a team that are just better than you. Yeah. And I think I wouldn't take anything away from Munster's performance in terms of the effort they put in. But I think Mark McCall gave a masterclass in preparing the team to come out the right side of a result when they were favourites. And I think, you know, credit must be due for that to him, you know.
Yeah, we are running out of time. I want to ask quickly, though, about Munster, because you mentioned it, like, they did a brilliant job in limiting Saracens and keeping themselves alive for the first 40 minutes of the game. But there probably is a tough reality afterwards where they look at the scoreline. And I think Peter O'Mahony said it afterwards as well. You know, Saracens were 16 points better, most definitely. There's no arguing about that. They're in a tough position now where they're pretty much at the top of that second tier of teams, but you ultimately have the likes of Leicester and Saracens, maybe, or Leinster and Saracens, and maybe Racing 92, who are just that little bit better than them, and it's just so tough to break that gap.
Yeah, look, Munster have to recalibrate where they're at, and I think the one of the things Munster struggle with is that Munster have a way of playing. It's been there since the day of DOS. They're a passionate, aggressive team. And back in the halcyon days of the Paul O'Connells and Ron McGarrahs and the John Hayes, and it's a litany of guys, they had basically the Irish pack and the Irish halfbacks. And they used to get right up to the front door and they couldn't knock it down for years. Then they signed a few key backs like Rua Tupoki, you know, they brought in Howlett. Some players who could beat people, Doug Howlett, finishers. And that got them across the line. Trevor Halstead was the first guy that he won. He was in the centre for the first win in 2006. But the thing about Munster now is that Munster pack of that time could match any pack in Europe, without a shadow of a doubt. But this Munster pack really can't. It's not the same. They're not the same horses. And they are trying to play a bit like the same way. They are trying to play the Munster style of, you know, physical aggression and dominance. And guys, it's not that guys aren't trying. They put in huge shifts. Like, the Munster forwards run themselves into the ground. But it's like they lose a lot of the collisions that they would normally have won in the old days. And the backs then could be more creative than they are. They have some good backs. Like, I mean, even though Carberry, Blendahl's a good player. Murray is a super. You know, they've got a good midfield. They've got good back three. Even without Earls, I think, and he's a cracker. But I think you'd like to see Munster move away to a more balanced game where they're trying to open teams up with their backs as much as their forwards. And I think it's a salient moment for them because historically they've had the same conversation at the end of each season after losing a semi-final that they'll be better next year. But I think they've got to look at it in terms of how do we change our approach. Unless we're going to produce a pack of forwards, we're going to dominate everybody. And at the moment, that's not the case and it's not likely to change. So I think they have a kind of a bit of navel gazing to do and they've got to figure out that maybe they've got to take a different approach to playing the game. Now, we know historically the last time they did that, the last time they tried to change the way they played was Rob Penny. And, well, we all know what happened there. Like, nobody kind of bought into it and he got a short shift and he was out of town. Like, but he was the one guy that was trying to get Munster to play the way Munster didn't play for years, and he didn't succeed. I think he might have been a bit overambitious, and he was probably too honest. But having said that, you know, it's a mental thing. Munster have to try and move away from the style of rugby that's defined them for years, because at the moment they don't quite have the players to deliver that against the big guns. And I think they'll do fine in the Pro 14. Like, we know they can do that in the Pro 14, but when you get to the top table in Europe and you meet, you know, you meet a Saracens, you meet a Racing 92, you know, you meet the big guns, that's not going to fly. You get so far and you hit this glass ceiling. And I think they're on a glass ceiling at the moment, and they need to sit down and recalibrate it.
Okay, Eddie, as always, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Neil.
Take care. So that is Monday Night Rugby for now. Joe will be along later on to bring you some of our best bits from 2019. Until then, though, bye for now.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.